What's up, everyone? This episode of Power Spike is brought to you by the three of us because we love this fucking game. And it's a new year, so we've got a brand new outlook on this game. Deegon, Monty, and Dom here to bring you the action to the brand new 2024 season of competitive League of Legends around the world. And as always, got to start with, how have you been? Dom, the last time I saw you was at Esports Awards. You were looking dapper in Vegas. How have you been, man?
Thank you. No, I've been doing good, man. I had like a return to playing the game. Like, I competed in the Dauntless tournament and then I just started playing a lot of solo queue again. So like, I'm back to fucking playing the game and now I'm co-streaming it now that everything started up again. So yeah, it's been good.
And just to highlight for everyone at home, because you never get to see Dom outside. You know, he's like a vampire, not in terms of how he looks, but he's just never outside. This dude was fucking fit. He looked super good. Like, it was very, very impressive.
Thank you, man.
So all the truths that he's been telling about putting in the work, going to the gym, working out, reading books, it's fucking true.
You look, yeah, we're like 50 really pounds lighter than we were when we started this show last year. So
yeah.
Wow.
So yep. That's motivation for all of you to get your fucking lazy asses off the couch and working out as well. Monty, I saw you in Korea. You were taking your Muay Thai classes. Was it Muay Thai?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So all three of us will kick your asses, so you better listen to us. Monty, how are you? Big news that came out for you lately.
I have doubled the amount of children that I have to a grand total of two.
Nice.
And that is why I am delirious and incredibly fucking tired. It's been hard. You know, having newborns and not being able to sleep for like months is just very difficult. So hopefully I will regain some level of sanity, you know, maybe around March-ish, but we got a long ways to go before I'm actually able to sleep again.
When I called, I voice called Monty's wife to check in and see how things were. Monty, in the background of the video, was just sitting on the couch staring off to oblivion. I was like, holy shit. It was pretty good. It was pretty good. For me, things have been good. It's a slower start. So there's a video game convention I go to every year called MAGFest. It's the Music and Games Festival. I think it's on its, I don't know, like 17th or 18th. I think it's 18th year. And it's actually where I got my start hosting and casting. It's like Burning Man for nerds that love video games and video game music. And it was great. So I wasn't there for LCS week one. I did the preseason interviews that obviously got Impact talking shit about General Sniper before Impact lost to General Sniper, which was great. But we'll be back at it and grinding things out. Also, I colored my hair green to do a cosplay, and now it blends in with green screens. So
that's cool.
We found this one out like pretty early on during the cast over at MAGFest, but yeah. I didn't really think this one through. We'll figure this one out later. All right. So that's the catch up with all of us. Let's get into our first topic of the day. It's a classic. Everything is on fire. And we're talking about the dead corpse over in the LEC. That's right. We're talking Karmine Corp. So the French outfit joined the LEC to great fanfare after boosting the LFL and boosting the numbers, and everyone's saying, put our team in, we will be the best, and holy shit, they have struggled. And both of you have had your ideas on why that is. Let's start with you, Dom. What's going on with Yamato and the boys?
Well, I mean, I just think that the players themselves are just not playing LEC level. Like, when you look at just the individual like mechanics, it just feels very hard to win. Like, the best two individual players on the team are Bo and Upset, which like is no surprise. So you're essentially just playing with I guess some games Sokken plays fine, but he never like wins. He never has presence in the game. Cabo is trying to figure out like how to play weak side. I mean, there's like a game where he played Jax, it was just completely useless. He had a Malphite game where he had one assist in like 29 minutes or something. So essentially, and because Targamas is just not really that strong in lane anymore, it's like you play with no winning lanes every game. So even when you draft winning lanes, like you don't have big enough leads, and their coordination is actually terrible. They don't have one person that is like confident and like says like, this is what we are doing right now. Like you can tell based off the communication pattern that Upset is used to playing with teams where like, where he will prompt the question, like he will prompt his teammates to make a call. It's like, okay, this is the problem. Like, are we turning? Are we finishing? Right. And normally that's not an 80 carries call. An 80 carry is not being like, finish the Baron. Like maybe fringe cases when you play Kalista, for example, would you be, or Zaya, something you can combo the Baron. Maybe in fringe cases, you could be calling to like finish or turn or whatever. Generally, like 80 carries are the ones that are calling targets in fights. They are calling like positioning. They'll call formations. They'll say like, I need this guy being marked on this portion of the fight. I need a ward in this bush. I need vision in certain areas so that I'm able to fight. Like that's what 80 carries are calling. And it just feels like the support is completely mute. I never hear anything useful from Targamas. Like I was watching a fight where he literally goes in, throws his arrow, dies, doesn't say one word. And then after the fight, he's like, Akali, no flash, no ult. And it's like, Akali is playing with Ignite TP. Akali doesn't like, I mean, I guess it's a good reminder that the Akali doesn't have flash, but like the Akali, like, yeah, the Akali does not have flash. Like she did not bring flash into the game. So I'm watching these games and it just feels like the players they put together don't make any sense. They need a player like Trimby on the team who wants to talk a lot, that wants to make those calls, because right now it feels like no one will step up to the plate. Targamas is not going to shot call anything. Bo is like trying to shot call in like a second language. Upset is trying to prompt people for shot calling, and Sokin and Kabo are kind of just like giving, like providing feedback. You have a bunch of people providing feedback. No one's making a decision. And when you combine that with poor individual like laning and mechanics, it's like you can't win a game because you don't win the game at any stage. Like you don't win in lane phase, you don't win late game, you don't win in mid game. Like there's no point where you can consistently win games.
So to your point, the fight that you're talking about was the Targamas Ashe game. And what's so funny about that whole sequence, Tom, is not only obviously what you said, but the disconnect between where people say that they're going on this team and where they actually are is fucking hilarious. Because, for example, you know, Bo is topside and he's saying, mid Azir, can you come? And he's like, yes, I can hard commit to top. And he just wanders around mid lane for like 10 seconds. After he says he can hard commit to top, it takes him 17 seconds to walk up the river. And Targamas, while he didn't say anything, he was assuming that people were like, I don't know, going to show up into the river in the top side where they were fighting. And so it's just like based on the feedback that they give each other, they say they're coming. They're not, in fact, coming. Every call that they have is just prefaced by, maybe we should do this, or maybe we should do that. Nobody is actually just like put their balls on the table, just slamming them down and saying, we are doing this, or get back, or finish, or get out. Even Bo is like, can we do this? And so it's just the level of dysfunction in their comms. Also, their comms are super cluttered in general with a lot of nonsense. And, you know, I have difficulty understanding all of the different accents in English. And I can only imagine that that's more challenging if English is not your first language, which it is not for the majority of these players.
All of their players.
For every all player of on their the team. Players. Yeah. Fair. For all of them. So it just feels like a giant mess. And then you have the individual underperformances. Honestly, like, I think Yamato's done a pretty good job overall with their drafts. I mean, their last game, I wasn't a big fan of the draft that they had. But for the most part, I think they've been put in like very winnable situations a lot of the time. And they don't seem to know how to like find the win conditions of their comps or like play through their lane advantages, because they lose lanes they should be hard winning, which is very puzzling. And like they don't even seem to know like the basics of how to run like a double AD carry lane. Like, have they never watched a T1 game in their entire lives? It's so fucking weird. They don't know how to dive turrets properly. Like, one of the most hilarious things about their comms is they're trying to dive a turret with like Vi and Melio, and they say Targamas, take aggro as Melio, and he just doesn't do it. And so Bo dies on the dive. And it's like the comms that you hear from the Carmine Corp YouTube channel are like shocking, but very funny. I mean, I spent 4 hours today watching their games and then watching the voice comms afterwards and just trying to do the autopsy of the Carmine corpse for a video that I'm going to be making in the next couple of days. So you guys can look forward to that. But it is miserable, guys. It's miserable out there.
Well, I mean, it's like they don't even, I don't understand how Targimus, for example, doesn't understand like the comm of like, take aggro. Like he's trying to auto the AD carry to grab aggro. Where like the reason his teammates are telling him to grab aggro, like if you were to just go into your teammates' mind and you're trying to think about what they're thinking, Bo and Upset know they have the damage to kill the target.
Yes.
So all they want is Milio to grab to
auto
aggro.
The support.
So all he needs to do is auto the support to get aggro. He just needs to start getting the aggro so that his team can do what they do. But like he feels like he needs to grab aggro and also get the auto attack on the AD carry, where it's like, dude, you're like 37 damage. Milio auto attack is not changing the results of this dive. Like Vi is charging Q and Bo has good mechanics. Like you can flame whatever you want about Bo. This guy knows how to fucking play the game mechanically.
Yeah.
He is sitting there charging Q and he is saying, grab aggro. The second you grab aggro, I'm going to time out. I'm instantly going to fucking go on the AD. I'm going to flash on the AD and then Upset's going to murder him. Like we're going to put him in a fucking body bag. Like, there's no way that you can fuck this up as a support. But then the other thing is just, it's not natural how little the support talks. You realize in most teams, the support is the one that's saying, I'm going to grab aggro. You're not having the AD carry tell the support, yo, you need to grab aggro. Like normally the support, it like wants to be like, wait for me. I'm getting aggro. Okay. Like go, I'll tank first. Like that's how every support talks in the fights that we're talking about top. Part of the reason people are so confused is like Bo's like, oh, can we move into top? Maybe we can fight here. And then Targimus just like walks forward, throws an arrow and dies. And it's like, normally if your support is doing that, right? Like your support is going to be like, okay, I'm looking for like an arrow here. Okay. I hit them. Akali's on me. Okay. Akali used ult. Like you can still fight. Akali used ult. Like they'll be calming what happened and what they think should be happening. But instead Targimus is like, Akali has no flash. It's like, yes, we know. He loaded into the game with TP Ignite. We know that he has no flash, motherfucker. Like, please give us something to work off of.
Meanwhile, Trimby is just sitting there on the LEC broadcast, being forced, like in a Clockwork Orange, with his eyes peeled open to watch this abomination.
Yeah,
and he doesn't even get to play the fucking game of League of Legends, apparently.
Yep. No, like it would really suck to have somebody who like to talk. You know, it's actually annoying when somebody talks too much. So let's just not put him in LEC, and instead we can have Targimus play.
I mean, didn't he end up there because it was just part of the support, the European support shuffle? Plus, with Ignar coming on in, it just meant, I guess, KZ just locked
well,
in targets
wanted,
early.
I mean, like who knows?
Okay.
I mean, it has to do with something probably that he is French speaking, right? Like that's the logical conclusion because he's Belgian, right? You would think that would have something to do with it. Yes, the French side of Belgium.
You know, yeah. We wouldn't know because it doesn't say anything in the comms. So there you go.
I mean, it's just weird because like Targimus used to be, he was always a player that didn't talk, which was a huge criticism against him. It's like the reason why he was kicked off G2, you know, after a year, even though he performed well, like they won an LEC title. Like he's always been a quiet player. But before, he backed that up by being like extremely good mechanically and he had like pretty good roams. So he had like these advantages.
Very big champion pool. He had a very big champion pool. And now he can't play any champions.
I mean, he had a very big champion pool, but that was also because like okay, so he could play champions, but he didn't actually have to do what those champions are supposed to do, which I think is like different than actually having a really an actual big champion pool. When you watch the people with real big champion pools play, they actually know how to execute all their champions in lane, outside of lane. Like they have like a full understanding, and generally like the strongest part of their game would be laning, and they understand how all their champions interact with enemy lanes that will be played and where they can get advantages, and they have like ideas of all the different matchups. Targimus never had to win lane on G2. He never, like, it was always like, oh, Flocket and Targimus, they just lose lane but they're like solid later on. Like that's a much easier job to do than when you actually have to like play well. And I think one of Targimus's biggest problems is that he is no longer good in lane. I can't say really no longer, but he is not good in lane right now. When he played the Ashe Caitlyn lane, the main reason that they're not winning the Ashe Caitlyn lane harder is on him. Like he's the guy that has Hail of Blades. Caitlyn has Fleet, and Caitlyn is just not as strong as Ashe level 1. When you play Hail of Blades Ash level 1, you watch Caria play this. What does he do? He stands in the fucking bush. If the enemy walks up, he walks forward, W, three autos. If the enemy support walks into the bush, he wards the bush and does the trade. Like, Targimus didn't ward the bush. He's playing on the opposite side of the lane, and he was getting out-traded by Alvaro's Renata. Renata was, like, dropping, like, an auto and E. Like, if the Renata walks up and tries to E-auto you, you chunk him to half HP if you're playing Ashe. Like, he just doesn't get to walk up to you, like, at that point in the lane. So because they're not doing that, they don't even crash the wave at the right time. Like, a bunch of the conditions exist in the game don't.
I mean, the funny thing, too, is the end result of that play in the bot side. I mean, technically, they get first blood off of it, but it's really ugly.
They don't get first blood off of it. They get first blood, but it's not. It doesn't have anything to do with how they play the lane.
There was another mistake that was made by Mad Lions in that game that resulted in first blood.
Yes.
All right. Anyway, but I mean, Bo actually anticipates this entire play because, you know, and this goes to show that they know at least at some level a very basic principle of what they're doing, because Bo comes in, wards behind Drake Pit so that he actually sees El Yoya coming back in. But instead of being able to collapse, they somehow are level 2 while the opposing lane is level 3. And then they don't actually fall back to make the intercept properly. Yeah. And it the whole thing fucks up. In that scenario, they should be at least even in level and have the lane entirely pushed up and the other duo chunks so that they could just turn on El Yoya and decimate him, but it just ends up in a clown fiesta instead. Unfortunately, we don't have replays, but I could not figure out how they were actually down in levels as Caitlyn Ashe versus Aphelios Renata with the start that they had.
Yeah, it's because when they played the lane, because they did not actually get good enough trades, they didn't stack a wave and like be able to like pressure. Generally, you're able to like stack 2-3 waves, and then when you crash it on the turret, you actually want to stack the third wave. Generally, you crash on the turret with like 3 waves of minions, and that's how Caitlyn Lux, Caitlyn any lanes, Ashe, fucking Varus, any of these, they get these leads is because they crash multiple waves. And then while you're trying to CS that big wave under a turret, they're poking you, they're autoing the turret, they're getting a plate. Like, that is like when you actually get the advantage in the lane. But because they only crash the second wave, then the third wave is pushing back. And then on the bounce, they're not strong enough. They're level 2. The other guys are level 2. They don't have an HP advantage. They can't actually contest the wave deep in the turret, so then the enemy is just able to like get the minions first, so on that wave they hit level 3 later. And I think the biggest problem is that, like, I doubt they're actually communicating that they fucked up to Bo. I would be very surprised if you listen to the actual voice comms.
I was sad we didn't get that part of the voice comms in the replay. I really wanted that one and we didn't get it.
That's an important thing. Like, if you do fuck up and the conditions are different, like, obviously you can put some blame on Bo because he should be a jungler and like know the conditions of everything in the game, right? Like, obviously junglers should know what's happening in all lanes all the time just by like F keying or just like panning their camera or just like knowing. But to most junglers, most junglers that play competitive, they're going to assume that certain situations are just winning. Like, they'll be like, oh, we drafted like we have a hard winning bot lane, so if I'm stronger than the enemy jungler and he's putting him in a position where I can jump on him and I have my lane in close proximity and they're a winning lane, why would I not go for that play? Like, that's what
it was. A good play by Bo. I mean, they had the counter play set up. They had the trap set up and it just failed to get sprung. It was rather spectacular.
And I would love to hear if Upset or Targimus called it off. If Upset and Targimus were like, oh, we can't fight right now.
Upset 100% called it off because he didn't walk over to actually try and contest the tri-brush behind them.
But
he was waffling around.
Did they call it off early enough? Because like the way the comms are going to be like, it's like, oh, El Yoya is on vision, right? Like, it's like El Yoya is behind the pit. He's on vision. Like, can we go on this guy in tri-brush? Like, I'm going on him. It's like, in that moment, are they being like, no, we can't actually do it like full clear. Like, somebody should be able to call that off and be like, okay, we know he's here. They're not in a position where they're going to die because they actually lost lane so hard that the wave was pushing back into them. They couldn't even contest the wave. They were going to wait for the wave to crash on their turret anyway. So like, they weren't in a position where they could die on that wave. It would have been the next wave that they would be able to be dove on, which would have given Bo time to clear the Krugs and still be in position to cover the dive. And they just didn't make that play. So Bo lost his flash, which ended up being good in a weird way because then Alvaro actually traded the flash. And then when they went on Alvaro, he had no flash. But like, I don't even give a fuck about that part. It's like so disgusting by that point that I don't even entertain the idea that that was like somehow worth. because it's so obvious that they didn't intend to have that situation happen anyway.
Well, I think it goes back to what we've diagnosed with how their comms go. You don't have someone who is decisive. You have a lot of people offering suggestions or giving information, but no one making a call. So if Bo's the one making the call there, that's it. And people work off of that information. I think that's the way that this team is.
Generally, when you have hard prio bot lane and you're playing Xin Zhao versus Sejuani, if the Sejuani walks into a killable position, you want to go on the Sejuani. Like, I'll tell you, as somebody who's played a lot of Xin Zhao, like, generally, that's like what you're scared about is like the game being completely even and then like the Sejuani just being a fucking tank and you're just like not as useful as the tank later on. You want these fights to happen. So, like, your natural instinct is going to be like, holy fuck, Sejuani's giving me an opening to fight her three, like at level three, right, when I have like a red buff.
But that's Bo's call, right? Upset's thought, if he's only thinking about himself, is holy shit, Targum has just fucked the lane and is focusing on fixing the lane, trying to hit level two and not focusing on what's over there.
Yeah, level three.
Level three. Yeah. So that, I think that seems to be what's going on with this squad. As much as we could figure out, again, if you all at home want a deeper dive at it, watch Monty's most recent bangers.
It will be coming out soon. It'll be coming out soon.
It was good. Chat also reminded us when he was on G2, his jungler was Jankos, who like is going to have like as much. He's going to call whatever he wants. There is no lack of talking with Jankos. So like, I feel like he was probably microed there as well, whereas Bo is, as we heard in the comms, is asking. He is asking. He's not always telling. He does tell sometimes, but a lot of time he's asking. So,
I think it's just disappointing because like you see a lot of Bo has a lot of very good early game instincts, and like, but he doesn't readjust when his teammates don't do the thing that they should be doing, which sometimes makes him look bad. And then the other thing he does is that when he gets pissed off, he just ints, as far as I can tell, just from last year and this year too. Like, he will just absolutely send it at times. So it's not that he is free from blame in this, but it has been interesting kind of watching each game him consecutively get more and more and more aggressive and more careless, I would say, in his approach to these games.
Dom, you offered a couple of fixes here. One sitting on the LEC couch, analyst couch. What is something that they can do here to go 3-6 and try to salvage this season? Is there something they can do now?
I mean, I don't know what they have to just find what their angle is as a team, like what the I would have to see scrims and see what they're actually good at. I have no idea what they're good at because they try a bunch of different approaches and none of them seem to work. They've tried like the scaling approach, they tried like the aggressive Lucian Nami approach, Lucian Milio approach, they've tried the like win lanes plus like a winning jungler, we're going to be so far ahead that they're not going to be able to breathe approach. Like, they've tried so many different approaches that nothing has worked, right? So I have no clue what the players are actually good at. I feel like it's some combination of just drafting Sokken like Azir or Corki every single game, Cabo Shard on a weak sider, and then finding some lane that Targumas is comfortable performing in. I don't know if like his Pyke is still good. I don't know what he actually like is good at this point. Whatever he wants to play, try to give Targumas something he wants to play, have Upset play with him, like play whatever the support wants to play. Bo, just play like Xin Zhao or whatever, and tank top Azir Corki mid. That's probably your recipe. Some version of that. And then you have to obviously consider opposing like lane matchups and just like, okay, if Azir's better for the game, go that. If like, you know, you're going a weak side top laner, then ban out things that shit on weak side top laners like Gwen, Jax. Like, you just have to tailor the game plan to try to get yourself in that situation.
I mean, I hate watching Seiken's Azir, man. He like, he doesn't actually put Sand Soldiers in choke points.
He's the best champion.
Azir or Corki, Monty? Azir or Corki? How many packages?
He doesn't actually go in on Azir in critical situations. He mechanically misplays Azir. Jesus Christ.
He plays Azir better than any other champion that he plays.
Come on, man. That can't be true, Dom. I refuse
to
believe
his most played in competitive. He has 60 competitive Azir games with a 55% win rate. Yeah, it's his best champion.
That's depressing.
Well,
I mean, look, I think he has nerves, so perhaps he's just playing it worse than he would normally play it. I don't know. I haven't really seen this guy play very much. I was not watching ERLs or anything like that.
I mean, I watched him play in season 10 during COVID, Vitality.
Right.
Yeah, he was not good. He was not good on Vitality either. And he came in and it's like, I think maybe he could get, you could maybe give him a pass for nerves, but he's played like EU Masters finals. He's played in front of big fucking crowds, but I guess it's different when you're playing in LEC, when you're playing a different level than when you have like the whole crowd behind you, you know, like everyone kind of wants to see K-Corp fail besides for like me, Gilius, Yamato, and like French people.
That's a lot of people. That's a very loud group of people. That's a
big, yeah, just no longer the majority of people, anymore.
No, that's true. I guess that's true. If you're down at the ERL level, that is more than the majority. Now it's still a big chunk, but no longer the majority. For our friends at home, let us know in the comments below how you would fix Casey. What is the fix here to revive them and have them do the miracle run and go 3-6 to put themselves in position for playoffs, which leads me, because we've got a shorter show this week, to Deegan's Fact of the Week, brought to you by no one. This format for the LEC has only been around for 1 year. Question is, how many teams have made it through the playoffs at 3-6? And which teams were they?
Did any of them do that? I think it must have happened like once.
Dumb.
But you basically need 4 wins to be safe.
Yeah.
So it'd be very hard to get in with 3 wins.
It's possible. I mean, it's actually pretty easy possible. To get in with 3 wins.
It's still possible for Carmine Corp to actually make it, but they're not in control of their own fate. Like some other teams have to lose.
Yeah, I'm looking at they're not in control of their own fate, but like when you consider the level of the teams that are in LEC right now, I think it's like if they beat Rogue, I don't think Rogue is winning 2 more games. I don't think Rogue is losing, like playing the way that they've been playing. They lose to KC and then they win their last 2 games against BDS, who's looked like one of the best teams, and GiantX. If Rogue beats GiantX and lose to K-Corp and BDS and KC goes 3-0, KC doesn't even have a tiebreak. They're just in. Crazy to me.
Yep. It is possible, because Yamato did tweet that out. We're going 3-6, or I think he said 4-6.
All right.
Yeah, because he's saying there's probably going to be a tiebreaker.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Astralis was one of these in one split. I don't remember which one, but I vaguely remember that happening.
What? Okay. Who are the worst teams ever in LEC? Or which? What was the question?
No. Who got out of the best of 1 round robin with a 3-6 record into the next group stage?
Best of 3 stage. Mad Lions.
That's right. That is one of them. And the other one is indeed Astralis. In the inaugural season, Astralis got in at 3-6. Mad Lions got in at 3-6 and then went on that incredible MSI run, right?
Yep.
Yep.
That's the Mad Lions run. They won the tiebreaker against Heretics. And then for summer season, it was, who was it? Astralis at 3-6, but that wasn't enough. Koi and Mad Lions split. Oh, and SK all split at 4-5. So well done, gents. Well done. And also for historical purposes, this is the first team to go 0-6 in this new LEC format. So it's not looking good.
It's not looking good. I mean, even going 0-3 in the first week makes it extremely difficult to get out.
But that's happened before. That actually is common. That's common. It depends on
strength of schedule, though. I mean, and you could say, oh, well, they did play Fnatic and G2 in the first week of competition, as well as Mad Lions, but they didn't, in fact, bounce back the next week. I think what's so remarkable about Carmine Corp is that they always just extend this little bit of hope. Like, they're ahead in some early games, or, you know, the other team also, it feels like many other teams play badly into Carbine Corp and make a lot of mistakes, but it almost just feels as though they have some sort of, you know, dark curse on them right now where they just cannot win a game. They're not allowed to win, no matter what kind of advantages they have. No matter how much the enemy team misplays,
tragic thing possible happens. Like, I don't know. When you watch them play,
it's experience.
Like, But they do it to themselves. Like, honestly, it looks like it's their fault that they like can't win. It doesn't look like other teams are getting like some buff against them. It looks like K-Corp just has no idea how to like actually win a game. Like, how do you break the Nexus? Like,
you know,
they don't leverage their advantages in ways that make sense. Like, they'll have an advantage and somehow they'll end up in like a 50-50 Baron situation.
I mean, this reminds me of the way that Breon used to lose last year in LCK, because the joke was always that they had these excellent early games, right? And yet somehow they would figure out the stupidest way to lose after having like advantages even on good teams. And that was part of the meme of being a Breon fan, because I don't think anybody's actually a Breon like real fan. But that was part of the pleasure of them, was discovering every time, how did they possibly lose this game?
I don't know. You're about to have Bro Nation attack the comments now, Monty. and that's why Umpty left. Umpty was like, I'm tired of getting these fucking early leads.
Umpty deserved to get out. That's fair.
All right. Yeah. Let us know in the comments below what you think the fix is here for Karmine Corp, and if you think they're going to make it out. I think it's such a weird juxtaposition to have them being so dominant and almost like the jock of the ERLs. Let us in, you won't, blah blah. And yeah, I think it's a punch to the gut to the whole fan base that really thought they were going to come in and dominate. Well, going from a bad situation, let's move to more bad situations, but one will be less bad than the other, because it's time for Keeper Kick, and we're making it international, because yes, the best in the West also started their season, and it was last week. It was LCS kicked on off. But if we look at the worst of the best of the West, that would be Immortals going up against Rogue. Which one would you keep or kick to improve? And the question will be, who has a better chance at making playoffs? Let's get into it. So Immortals Progressive made lots of moves. They brought in Castle. They brought in Mask.
I like how you're calling them Immortals Progressive.
I had to do it once. For the Immortals homies that are trying really hard to, you know, let's just do it once, and then we'll call Immortals IMT that other team afterwards. But
I'm not sure there's anything that's been progressive about Immortals roster. You know what I mean?
They imported a ton of players.
Ever since the start of Immortals, it has been literally the opposite of progression, because they should just be called Immortals Regressive, because they have only regressed from their first season. They have only regressed from their first season. The Huni reign over high was there. Then they just bombed out of playoffs.
I mean,
after having adopted
their second season, they made Worlds with the Pobelter Smithy lineup. So they actually did better place wise. They made finals in the second season. Come on.
All right.
They progressed.
Well, it was a very brief progression. But, you know, ever since then, it's been 7 years of Immortals Regressive ever since that point in time.
Yeah. Well, they were out of the league for a couple of years. So, you know, they weren't there. So you can't blame them. It's like four straight years of just horrors.
Well, yes. Immortals made some moves. It didn't quite pay off here in week number one. They're sitting at 0-2. Rogue, on the other hand, has had 2 weeks to play, but more matches to play, and they find themselves at 1-5. And with Rogue, kind of like how it is for a lot of teams at the bottom, they're finding ways to win. They're putting themselves in position. And then there was a couple games where they just got completely ran over. That wasn't great. But they're finding early trades in the bot lane. They haven't been able to figure it out either. And they have some quality players. What is going on, and which one would you have make the playoffs here? Let's start with you, Monty, on this one.
So do we know what the actual LCS playoffs format is?
I think it's six teams, right?
Yeah, it's six.
Oh, it's six teams. They finally announced that.
Yeah, only two don't make it.
All right. So they would have to reach top six, which, I mean, I just think it's hilarious that we're even having this conversation when Immortals somehow we're down to eight teams and we still see absolutely nothing happening with this roster. Ole's returning. I love Ole, by the way. I think, I don't know why he keeps going back for more punishment to Immortals. Why can't this man get a better team? Please. They get two more Korean imports in Castle and Mask. But the thing about this team is they're not even fun to watch, like Shopify Rebellion. Like, at least Insanity is putting on some sort of crazy show for me to enjoy. And Shopify, you know, at least, you know, feels like they have life in them, that they want to come back in this game. They had a shocking deficit versus FlyQuest in their first game, and they made a push to maybe kind of get back into the one that. But I don't get any sense that we are going to see something unique or interesting out of Immortals, in the same way that Rogue has also just been slowly downgraded, it feels like, over the years. Even there was hope of like, oh, well, now we're not going to have Malrang anymore. But what I came to realize about Malrang not being in this team is that I really miss him, because at least he made the games fun. At least Malrang was doing crazy shit that didn't make any sense, and it was fun to watch. Rogue's biggest crime is that they've just become incredibly boring, and now there is no joy to be sparked in any of their gameplay. So, I don't know. I actually think I kick Rogue. I think I actually do that just because I am so sick of some of these players just being imprisoned inside of Rogue, and Larson now signing a multi-year deal to continue with this roster, when this guy, I know, still has the skill to be a good mid laner on a good team, and it's just not being seen here. Plus, they had all that scandal about people not being paid in the offseason and like Koi getting into a fight with them. So just as an org, like, we haven't seen any of those shenanigans with Immortals. So as an org, I feel much better about, you know, the finances of Immortals.
It's early season, everyone. We had to find which ones were going to drool over themselves early. Dom, how are you shaking this one out? Are you looking at the financials of the orgs to figure out which one you're going to pick?
No, I'm just simply just, I hate watching Rogue play. I kick Rogue just because they are the worst team to watch in all of League of Legends, I think. There's nothing that's interesting about this team. They just are AFK. They farm the game out. They don't do anything with advantages, and then they just mess up every play that they go for. There's nothing there. Immortals, it's at least kind of fun to like watch the imports fail. Like, I was somebody who at the beginning of when Immortals signed their lineup, I was criticizing the imports. I'm like, who the fuck are these guys? Like, why would you import these players, right? And everyone was like, dude, give them a chance. Like, you don't know like how good they are. I'm like, look, if I see somebody play in Korean Academy for 4 years, and they're like 22 years old, based on the Korean system, that means that they did not see potential in this player. Like, he didn't get a shot on any fucking team. He was in academy for that long. Now I'm supposed to pretend that he's going to come to NA and he's actually going to be good. Like, he's going to be better than the people that we have when we had like Licorice that was available, Revenge that was available. Like, these people didn't get jobs, so this guy could fucking play. I don't want to see Castle play. Mask, I watched play in ERL. He was so forgettable. Like, I watched him play in ERLs, and I don't even remember thinking that he was, like, good or anything. I watched him play series and had no takeaway about, like, oh, this guy is, like, the future. If you're playing in an ERL, and I can't even tell that you're good in an ERL, I don't know, man. It's, like, it's very hard for me to believe you're going to be good in LCS. So, like, you bring in you import all the problems that we've had for years with, like, language barrier, everything. Culture shock, everything. And then you like just aren't extremely good at the game either. What the fuck is the point? So at least I'll be watching on Immortals and like praying on their downfall. Rogue, it's like, I don't even care if they win or lose. I'm just so apathetic towards Rogue. Like, they could win the rest of their games. They could win LEC, and I'd be like, nice, man. Rogue won LEC. Great. That'd be my takeaway.
I just want to throw this one out. Just because you brought up an example of a player that was stuck in academy for a little while over in Korea, didn't get their shot. Just today, Kwangdong Freaks brought up an 80 carry named Bull. No.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bull. Yeah, Bull, yes. And Bulldog. Bull, yeah. Bull, yeah. Bull just got bumped on up after knocking their previous 80 carry down. He's 21, and he out-dueled Deft, and they won. 0-2 Kwangdong Freaks beat 2-0 KT Rolster. So it can happen.
How much of it was Barrel's fault? Be honest.
No. It was actually, yeah. The support Andil played pretty well against
Andil in game. Well, Andil is quite bad himself, but Taeyun was griefing last week. He was fucking terrible. So I'm glad they actually called up Bull. Although Wolf told me that like Bull had not had very like convincing performances in challengers. So I guess this was a very big surprise to everybody.
It's just my point that maybe Dom's right and Mask and Castle could work out. So I'm just throw those ones out there. And I feel like there's a lot more hope.
Let's see if he plays well for like an actual period of time, or whether he has like one good series and KDF goes back to being bottom feeders in the LCK like they've been for a year now.
But Dom,
I was told that KT was hyped this year because Deft and Pioshik and Beryl were getting back together, and because people never watched Pioshik in the LCK when he wasn't on good teams, including DRX, by the way, who was a bad team for most of the time.
They were the worst team. They were like 2-16 with him.
People don't know, Dom, that he is one of the streakiest players I've ever seen. And when he goes cold, he is stone cold.
I mean, there's a reason why Juhan was qualifying that team to Worlds.
Yes, exactly. You get it. But see, the fans don't know that because they only watched Worlds. So they haven't
Watch anything. Like I like hear like the conversations that I see, like I'm pretty sure that most people didn't watch T1 at all outside of like maybe semifinals and finals. Like I'm pretty sure no one watched a T1 game. Like it's all just like it was just fucking 100,000 view bots on the stream perma.
How dare you, Dom? Those T1 fans are so hardcore. They watch all the games, surely. Right, yep. They watched all the finals that T1 lost. You know, the last three finals in a row that they lost to Gen G.
I saw a comment to you that actually triggered the fuck out of me when you were talking about how like Faker didn't deserve to be like player of the year, like which was like an obviously sane take.
Yes.
And one of the most upvoted responses to you was that at minimum Faker was a top three player in the world for the last 3 years. And that was like a common thing that like most people like co-signed. It's like we're talking about like literally 2021 saying that he was a top three player in the world when he wasn't a top three player in his position. Like try to wrap your head around like how distorted we've made reality to actually have this be the consensus.
It's so crazy.
Yeah.
Like so when Canyon and Showmaker were like going to MSI finals, when they were dominating the fucking LCK. When they were dominating the LCK and then losing to like Viper at Worlds, and when they were losing to like Xiaohu at MSI, no one on RNG gets to be a top five player in the world. No one besides like, so I guess it's just Canyon Showmaker. Like Chovy just doesn't exist, I guess, in those years either. Well, like,
and
no
also,
one exists.
You know what?
I don't know.
You know what else doesn't make sense about that, Dom? Is that by Korean logic, whenever they have to vote for an all pro team, it's just all five players, whoever won, you know, the regular season. They're just all the best. So by their own logic, if Faker isn't even winning, then how could he possibly be top three? Because the Koreans would just vote. That's right. They would just vote. They would just vote all the players of the team that beat them is the best team. There you go.
It's Scout. I don't understand.
It's so weird. There's like something that's so strange about how like when you enter conversations about LCK, the direction that it goes.
Yeah. I derailed this pretty hard there using the bull analogy. My bad. Looks like
thing that just happened. So
yeah. We're gonna keep Immortals here, and you know, Rogue. We'll see if they're gonna find any gusto left. It's a team full of talent, but and Zoli's.
Everybody's looking forward to the Rogue Carmine Corp banger that's gonna happen this coming week.
Yeah, man.
Truly. The greatest time we had.
All right. Yeah. I am going to derail this before we get to the next topic, just because it feels way more emotionally charged that these teams are region/country-based. Like, it feels very emotionally charged. Is that a feeling that you've been getting with the LEC lately, Dom? Because it makes me worried. It makes me worried we're going to see some of the worst.
It's become like what we just talked about, the fandom that I see in LEC. I know a lot of people are like, dude, it's so much more hype because of the fandom. I think it's just so boring when like you can't have actual conversations, because if you just like, if you criticize a Spanish player, then like all of Ebi's fan base just shits on you. If you criticize the French player, then all of Kometo's fan base shits on you. It's like you can't actually like appropriately rank anything. Like it just becomes this thing where you're like, don't piss off the fans. And then I just sit there and I just fucking say whatever I think and just like look at the amount of comments. And I can tell by the amount of comments whether it's even worth engaging or not. Like if I have a tweet and I have 4,000 likes and I see 600 comments, not even worth clicking. Like, it, you know, it's just going to be like a bunch of fucking bullshit. So in some ways, like, I know that it's like hype and like, I should be like, oh, there's more hype in the league, which means that like, I guess like I'll like my stream will be more hype. Like I should like care about that. But I actually just enjoy having better conversations about the game. And I feel like that is just becoming completely lost in LEC.
Only just because this is one of our mods and this is interesting. Latvian guy, confirm that for me and then I will run that, because that's actually really funny to me. Like, we're getting hooliganism at the events that are actually happening now. We'll see if that's actually true. To close out LEC though, so we have Rogue and Carmen Corp not making it out. We don't think Gigante X is not gonna choke it up.
They could lose to Rogue, maybe. Who knows, man? I mean, look, if Rogue gets a win over K-Corp, maybe they have the like momentum of the week. And then when they play that final game into Giant X, they're like, oh, we broke our losing streak. Maybe we can win. I can see Rogue making it out. I hope they don't, though. I don't want to watch them play anymore.
All right.
They're by far the most boring team.
Well, okay. Section one, everything's on fire, Carmine Corpse. Not good. Section two, Keeper Kick, the bottom teams in LEC and LCS, not good. Section three, Galaxy Brain Club, let's turn it up to the positivity. Who are the good teams to watch in 2024? We've only had a couple of weeks in there, but I know that our experts have a couple teams that tickled their fancy, and we're going to get into it right now. All right, Dom, how's your OMG NIP guys doing in LPL? Is that where we're going with teams?
Yeah. I actually want to know, because I'm going to watch the NIP match tomorrow. So how was the NIP match? Did they look good?
Not really.
I watched it with you, Tom.
It looked pretty mediocre. I mean, aspects of it looked good, but it's really hard to tell, because like LGD is probably going to be better than people think this year. Like, they're not going to be the worst team in LPL, where people have this perception that because they were the worst team in LPL last year, they're going to be the worst LPL team this year. Where I think that actually, like, with Birdle Meteor, like, it's just the main problem that I think that they had before is, like, Decade was also, like, really, really bad. So Birdle's actually an upgrade over him. And, you know, like, Haichao's a player who, like, I don't think he's as bad as his record makes him look. Like, he has some in moments, but I think that they'll probably be, like, around, like, a 14th. 13th best team, as opposed to like where they were, which is like 17th by far. They look terrible. So it's hard to know how good NIP is, but I don't like, I mean, I thought I before the season, I wasn't one of those people that thinks they should necessarily make worlds. Like, I feel like they should probably be more around like the 6th, 7th in LPL when you consider all the teams. And I have a feeling that they'll still be that. I think that this team's going to have a problem shot calling. I don't think that they have like a real in-game leader. And I think Joe is pretty sus individually. So unless the meta hits NIP like right in their face, I think it's going to be hard for them to like break top four in LPL.
That's a bummer. I wanted Rookie to be on a good team.
Yeah, well, it was that match. The game one was really fun, Dom, because it felt like, okay, NIP has this. And then it just got messy. Rookie was getting caught. Aki flat.
The game
flat,
is kind of lost right now.
Was doing his own thing. It felt like they were off page there.
Yeah, I mean, I think the main thing that is just weird about League right now is how strong tank items really are, where tanks used to be outscaled by crit AD carries by a lot. You know, like, yeah, once an AD carry would get four items, they're getting one shot. Like, you just shred the tank instantly. Now with new items, now with like Rukern and like all the tank stats that a tank will get, it's like a full tank comp that's also full AD is like kind of evenly scaling within a Zir, Zaya front to back team comp, just because of the fact that they can just tank through all the damage. So I'm curious to see like when the game changes and when things are adjusted, think Frozen Heart already got nerfed. They'll probably get nerfed again. This is probably not the last Frozen Heart nerf. Frozen Heart will be nerfed. Rukern will be nerfed. Like, when these items get nerfed and tanks are brought in line, crit AD carries will probably be buffed at some point. Like, is this actually going to be comps that NIP will be successful on? Will they be able to play like Xayah, Azir, and things like this?
Well, give us a team that, given that we're in a tank meta, would be good now. Not even just tank meta, but some of the good teams that you've seen so far, Dom.
Yeah, I think the purpose of this... Yeah, I think the purpose of this is because, like, one of the fun things about the show is we do global League of Legends and we hop around. So, like, what I want to do is give people the teams that they should be interested in and the vast field of League of Legends games right now.
I mean, I think BLG looks really fun. Like, they're just kind of an upgraded version of who they were last year, and they were ready for my money for most of the year. They were a top four team in the world, right? I mean, Weibo beat them at the end, but they placed top four in everything that they competed in the entire year. They were second in MSI, second in spring in LPL. Summer, they were third at Worlds. They were third, fourth, tied with JDG. This team with a mid laner that's like even more dominant, I don't think that they really needed Yu Gao to bridge the gap. I think Yu Gao is good at like facilitating other players, but when everyone else is already so good, I don't even think that he's needed on this team. And now just having somebody who's a slightly stronger laner, I just feel like they're an upgraded version of themselves. And I think the meta is also pretty fucking good for them. Like, they're not really an Elk hyper carry team anymore. Like, Bin can play everything, and then now you have Jhon who can also play everything, and their bot lane can play a bunch of these really aggressive lanes. And the best version of BLG is when they're dominating bot lane and diving bot over and over again. That's what they did at MSI to T1. That's when you feel like this team is just really on form, and it feels like they're able to do that more right now, especially in this meta with like lethality AD carries.
That is what they did to Golden Guardians until it basically dove them out of the league. Yeah. Out of existence.
Yep.
BLG is Dom's first pick. What about you, Monty? Who are teams that have caught your eye?
Look, I think we, you know, if we look at the LCK side, Gen G beating T1 right off the bat, no matter how much faith you put in the Gen G super team concepts, and it wasn't a super clean series or anything like that, but, you know, these first games of every league, as the players get accustomed to the meta and all the changes, and coming off break, we don't expect to be necessarily the highest quality League of Legends that they're going to play this year. But I think that Gen G did take a statement win over T1, and it seems like they're kind of very slowly tiptoeing into the waters of playing together as this current roster, because we haven't seen, like, I expected, you know, Canyon to come out and he was going to be the one on brand, not Willer or Jhon, right? But no, he's just been on tank duty. Like, it seems as though Gen G really wants to kind of, you know, play a certain style and kind of get some big wins with that before starting to mix it up and experiment, which I think is probably for the best, because even though you have all these legendary players all concentrated on this roster right now, and that we know that they individually have a lot of versatility, by doing this, you can focus more on the way that you work in comms and the way that you're going to shot call within these games, as opposed to being super worried about changing that and like having to shift your win conditions every single time that you play, which I think is a problem for Karmian Corp, for example. And so I think Gen G was more than I expected immediately, especially considering that T1 was just running their entire roster back.
That, you know, that surprises me there, Monty, because I thought you would go with the bad boys of the LCK. Give me the most recently fined Hanwha Life super team, Hanwha Life Esports, because
I don't want
because you had last year's drama with Mr. Band, who will not be named,
Clid,
which thrust young Grizzly. Yeah, you got him. And then with Thrust Young Grizzly.
Young Grizzly allegedly other people.
Not
as well.
He was just getting ran over. Dandy got fined at the beginning of the season for in-game verbal abuse, about like $500. That's so funny that, you know, Dandy, legendary, like, you know, champions player, now coaching, also abusing him. But also, the more important thing, Delight and Viper together, holy shit, out of Elo hell, and they've looked good. To be fair, they've played the bottom half of the league. And it'll come to fruition here at the final match day of this week where they play T1. Yeah. But until then, that seems fun. Things are working. Peanut is hex flashing under a tower for fun. It's providing stability in the areas that they needed help, right? And so I think that to me is exciting to see, and we'll get to see against T1 how they do. So
why is it though that it's an Akali meta, and we've seen all these games from Hanwha against bad teams where Akali hasn't been picked or banned, and I can't watch Zekka play Akali. Why is that? why do I have to watch Zekka play fucking Azir and Corki every single game? He's had one Yone game, and then just don't know Akali. I can't watch Zekka play Akali for I don't know what reason. Like, are they saving the Akali? It's not like the Akali is a secret. Is he just not allowed to play his skin? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, no. You're not allowed to play the skin. And also, let's let Viper get his games in. He went through hell. Like, you know, he didn't have a jungler. Like, let's ease him into everything. So I think we'll save the big matchup for when they go and play Faker. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. The other team.
Yeah,
so I'm
interested in Hanwha. T1, obviously, I think they're going to bounce back. You know, everybody's already excited about T1. There's a very clear division in LCK between top and bottom teams. Like, I'm not particularly interested in KT because I just know how this barrel in Pioshik goes. This ain't my first rodeo. So they lost a fucking
freaks,
Kwangdong
baby.
Tonight. So there it is. It's already happening, guys.
And then they're playing the T1 later this week. So it could be an 0-2 week for KT.
And then D plus, you know, Showmaker never really has recovered from his decline. And as exciting, like the two exciting rookies are Lucid and Perfect on D plus and KT respectively. And they've actually been pretty good. Like they've had some really high moments, I think. But like Lucid has been sneaky good, but the rest of his team has kind of just griefed him at times. So he hasn't. You know, he hasn't looked as good because his teammates are actively sabotaging games. So I don't know. And then the bottom half of the league is the bottom half of the league. Maybe Nongshim can do something. Maybe Kwangdong can do something because we expected more out of Kwangdong, like at least an increase in power level because like Dudu is actually like a good top laner. Cuz is on the roster now. And maybe now without Taeyun being the horrible dead weight, they might be able to do something there. So those are some in the LCK. Mostly you're probably just going to watch the top three, though.
Anyone on the Cloud9 super team? How's that look to you so far, Dom?
Cloud9 super team?
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
Yeah. JoJo Vulcan.
JoJo is, I think, the person that is just gonna make this team just Thanos. Like you put JoJo on this team and it's like, okay, who's gonna beat them ever now? Yep. Like they looked better than NRG already, but I mean I would say that in general, they probably would have been like even with their old roster, they probably would have been favorites against NRG even if they played them in like 10 series in a row. It just happens that NRG showed up on that day and like they just played a lot better than them in finals. So I think now when you have a winning, like a hard winning mid, and I think JoJo is just the best mid in LCS, it's going to be difficult to actually beat this team in LCS. I just don't see how a team can compete with them player for player. And I don't see them having any issues with like macro. I mean, I feel like they're very solid with how they want to play the game. Everyone listens to Blabber. So I just think that this team is just like they're too fucking good for LCS.
Just get them to international play. That's all I want. Don't choke this one out. Get them.
You
want to
see Fudge in international play?
I want to see JoJo. I want to see JoJo.
I mean, I just hope that Fudge just like accepts his role in international play. I'm done with like the like Fudge trying to play Jackson to Rumble in international play, like him trying to play fucking Jace or Fiora in international play. It's like every time he goes international, for some reason, his mentality is like, I'm going to show that I'm better than them. It's like, no. We just need you to show that you're not terrible compared to them. And then like other places might be able to win.
LEC, do we did G2? I mean, what do we think?
I mean, I also on the LCS front, like FlyQuest is at least nominally interesting. It's fun to be able to see Bwipo Inspired back in professional play after their breaks. you know, if their bot lane can continue to develop, like maybe they will provide some minor competition for Cloud9. But I think Cloud9 is, it's really just their year to lose. They were one piece away, and EG folding and giving up Jojopyeon was such a huge boon for Cloud9 because it instantly upgraded them to the best player from their worst position. And that was it, right? And then they got Vulcan back, and Vulcan only left because of the anti-synergy he had with Sven, and with Sven no longer on the roster, so here we are. Just feels like Cloud9 got absolutely everything they wanted.
I think it's just Jensen that makes me less excited about this team. We'll see. But
you know. I mean, Jensen when he's good is good, and he's been playing pretty well so far.
I still just have, you know, Dignitas Jensen felt better than Cloud9 Jensen. Like the last time he was on.
I mean, that's true, but Cloud, he was coming off his like break where he didn't really play a lot of League of Legends when he got back onto Cloud9. He was bad on the last time he was on Cloud9, though.
Yeah. All right.
Got a title though.
He did. He did. Another ship.
Says a lot, doesn't it? Says a lot.
All right. I want to throw in another one in here. Another just quick point out, call out. Best jersey that you've seen so far. We had a lot of jersey refreshes. What is the best jersey you've seen across the world of League of Legends, Dom? Because you've seen a lot of it.
I don't even care about jerseys like that normally. But
come on, man.
I don't even remember all the fucking jerseys. It's like, fuck, who could have a good jersey? I'll tell you, the OMG jersey is fucking terrible. I'll tell you that. I only notice them when they're bad, really.
Let's see. LPL jerseys. Because I think it was the NIP jersey that I saw. I was like, okay, these are...
OMG jersey, they look like five traffic cones.
Wait, I need to see this. Hold on.
Yeah, like each player, they stand next to each other, like it looks like they're just five traffic cones.
See, LPL jerseys. I put in LPL jerseys, and the first thing that came up was NIP's jersey. So that is telling me about, you know, it's always listening. I really like Ninja in Pajamas, man. They've got theirs. LNG's is okay. FPX is okay. Ultra Prime's is ass. World League's ass. Yeah, Ninja in Pajamas. Let us know in the comments below whose jersey has been the most fire. You can pick by region or whatever, but for me, I think it's Ninja in Pajamas. FlyQuest had a really big another one. I think Team Liquid has a classic. Cloud9 has a new one. So let us know in the comments. All right. Let's close it on out.
We should talk about LEC quickly. Just yes, very okay, quickly.
Yeah, sure.
Because I went back to LCS. But yeah, I think with LEC, I just want to be very clear. I am not at all excited about Team BDS. I am not at all excited about this roster. I am much more interested in the games that we've seen from like G2, SK, Fnatic, Heretics. Obviously, I'm very invested as a longtime League of Legends viewer in Heretics because them being the old G2 roster. And I think it would be low-key sick to have a finals of like old G2 versus current G2. I mean, the storylines would just be absolutely amazing. So I'm down for that. SK has shown surprising competence. Like Niski got dropped in their lap. And they're playing like a Niski team should, and he feels like he's taking a very good leadership role within that team. I think that Yzma has been like surprisingly good for a new player, and Irrelevant like continues to grow. So I think SK has been, and also their teamwork, I think, and their coordination has been some of the best over the first couple weeks of competition as well. So SK was a very pleasant surprise for me, and G2 will, of course, return to form and dominate as they always do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think LEC, the quality has been really rough. Like G2, this is what I said on stream. Whenever you look at LEC and you don't know who the best team is, normally it just means it's G2. Like when you watch BDS play or you watch SK play, you don't really believe that they're the best team. When G2 loses games, you're like, how, like, are they actually bad or did they just kind of like grief this draft? That's how you feel. And I don't know. I mean, a lot of times I can get it down to the fact that I think that like they're trying things out and they're trying to play different styles. And when we get into playoffs, they'll hone in on what the meta is. They'll still have Draven, Kalista banned against them every single game, which will open up a bunch of different combos that they'll be, you know, serviceable on. And they'll just win because they're the most coordinated team and they're the best team when they're on like drafts that they know how to play in LEC. Like BDS, I'm still not convinced. I feel like they should have lost like almost every single game they played, and then they just end up winning because they have slightly better coordination. Maybe we end up with like a BDS G2 finals or maybe a G2 Fnatic finals, something like that. But I just don't think that there's going to be like that close of a... Yeah, I just don't think it'll be that close between like G2 and the other teams once we get into playoffs. I think they should be able to figure it out from here.
All right, there you go, LEC fans. There's your LEC love in this early season stage, which all of us have acknowledged. Early season league, it looks clunkier, it feels clunkier. So yeah, we're defaulting to the, until someone's super dominant, it's going to be G2 once they figure it out. Because they always do. Oh, sorry. All right. Dang, almost done. Let's close it on out. Certified banger of the week. Only the palate cleansers for you with a lot of teams' matches kind of randomly ending or inting into each other. Let's get into it. Our certified banger of the week, BLG against Top Esports over in LPO. All right, Dom, these two dominant forces did battle early on. We also were thinking about going with T1 and Gen G, but same kind of thing. Why are we scheduling such early season bangers?
I hate this, by the way.
It's so dumb. It's so dumb. Put them in week four. Put the best match in week four.
I mean, we know why they do it for viewership reasons, and it wouldn't be a problem if the game didn't drastically change every offseason. But because Riot... And, you know, it was also the timing this year. Because Riot needed their little Christmas vacation, everybody else gets fucked in the professional scene. They couldn't push back the start of pro play for 2 weeks. No, no, no. We had to make it so it started right after the patch dropped on live. Totally ridiculous situation. And sure, you'll look at the viewership numbers, except for LCS, and you'll think, wow, this is amazing. Look at the big viewership of T1 versus Gen G. Over 1 million people. But... you know, now we don't get to watch the actual good version of that matchup until fucking March. And by the way, guys, BLG versus Top, LPL is single round robin. So we don't get to watch that maybe ever again. And we just got it on the janky ass, like, first patch of the new season.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of wish it was just like, all right, let's just do inverse order. One plays 18, two plays 17, three plays 16 from last season. And that to me is kind of hype if a team bought a ton of players or whatever, but then you keep one away from two and away from three and stuff like that. But we'll see. Sorry, Dom, didn't mean to cut you off about that rant. Let's get into it. BLG Top Esports.
Yeah, BLG Top Esports. I mean, the thing that I really like about BLG is just how aggressive they are. They've always been kind of like the most, I mean, what I always would say last year is they're the most Chinese team. Like when you think about what great Chinese legend League of Legends looks like in your mind, you expect like a bunch of fighting. And if you just go watch the first like 7 minutes of BLG Top Esports, that is Chinese League. You have Knight literally level one in between two turrets, just like trying to poke Cream out before the lane begins. They invade level one, level three. You have a bot push into the turret and start poking them. Brand invades on that same side of the map using the Pryo, chunks the Zen out, burns his flash, and then dives bot. And sits there like harassing bot for like a minute.
It's like what that Carmine Corp game should have been. It's like what that Carmine Corp game should have been. This is the proper version of that.
Yeah, exactly. It's literally just that. It's what the Carmine Corp game could have been if their bot lane actually like knew how to like stack waves in lane. Because you just sit on them, you stack three waves, you sit on them with three waves, and then the Brand can literally sit behind the turret. They did this for like a minute straight. They just poke at them with spells, and then they can dive. And from there, the way they close out the game is so clean. So when I'm watching this team, I just think that they're the favorite to win LPL this year. I think they're better than JDG. What were you going to say?
Yeah. That game one was just beautiful. Like, if you watch one game from this series, like, it does. I think game three is kind of a fiesta, but game one is such a epic snowball. And with Jhin playing this great Brand jungle and how you can translate lane pressure into just total dominance, and you get to see Knight play like the nerfed version of the AD LeBlanc super well.
It still looks super OP.
Yes, it does. I mean, it helped that the poke damage on the Jhin ended up getting him first blood in that game also, which like helped the, you know, snowball start rolling. But this is a great game of League of Legends. It is, again, I was surprised to see with kind of this newer roster, with newer players coming back on the team, that they were playing the game this cleanly, but it looked great. Like, they look really good, and it's an absolute pleasure to watch game one of this series.
Yeah, early League of Legends, not always the cleanest, but you know you're always going to get a good game here with Top Esports and obviously one of the reigning powerhouses in the world in Bilibili Gaming. All right, y'all. Boom. First episode done and dusted. 2024 kicked off right. Again, if you haven't already, I know I always say it, but gotta say it. Take the moment right now. Like and subscribe to our YouTube channel, our TikTok, our Spotify playlists, wherever you listen to your content. Take the second to hit the subscribe button. It really helps us with our numbers. We really appreciate it from all of us here at Last Free Nation. Also want to take a second here at the end of our show to just give the thoughts and the shout outs to the 11% of the workforce over at Riot that got let go, a lot of it being the esports staff, not the leadership. The staff, the guys and gals and people that make the show happen, that put out some of your favorite content, that get the players in and out on time. A lot of great people got let go from a job, a role, an identity that they've had for a long time. And so as much as we harp on Riot, a lot of the time we're looking at leadership, we're looking at people that should be making better strategic decisions and not necessarily the folks that make it happen day to day. And so with that, giving their best wishes to land on their feet and figure out what's best for them moving on. Quick thoughts here, guys.
No, it's just a bummer because I would love to see some of the Riot leadership be booted from their positions. But it does suck when it's like the rank and file on the production team who are doing a good job. And it's like a lot of the times the decisions that are made have effects on the product, and the product itself could be good. Like, I actually think the LCS broadcast has massively improved over the last couple of years. And I think the changes that have been made to it this year have been very good. But unfortunately, because of everything that's happened in the decade plus of history and the decisions that leadership made, we're now in a position where the viewership continues to decline. And it doesn't matter how good a job these people are doing, they still get screwed in the end. So it's depressing to see.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, is that you have like leadership make a bunch of decisions that don't make sense, that kill the hype for the product. And then like later on, when the product doesn't succeed, they just like fire the people that are doing the work that they told them to do. It's like, what the fuck? Like, you literally order, it's like somebody like it tells you like, oh, like go like shoot this guy in the head. And then it's like, all right, well, now you're going to jail. It's like, and then they put you in jail for it. It's like, what the fuck? Like, you just, you made me do that. So I don't understand like why they make decisions that they do. For example, good example is 2022, when co-streaming was going really, really well for LCS and Doublelift was getting like 30K views and LS had 15. And when I got banned, I had like around like 15 as well. When we had all this viewership, what did leadership say? Leadership said, hey, in order to make co-streaming more hype, what are we going to do? We're going to make co-streaming only exist in playoffs and super weeks. So you don't get to watch the majority of regular season. You get to only watch the really hype moments with your co-streamer. And as a result, less people just watched. It's not like all the viewership just went to the main broadcast and it was like, well, here's like 60K extra viewers that the main broadcast has. It's like, no, now you're just down like 30K viewers overall. Like, it was just a general negative. And it made people not care as much about the product. So they keep on doing things like this. This is just an example of things that they keep on doing to like harm the product, and then they fire the people that are actually like working on it that don't have a say in anything. And the thing that was so crazy is like most of the people that you interact with at Riot, pretty much everyone you interact with at Riot, like you'll have a good interaction with. The only people that you have bad perceptions of are the people at the top of Riot. Like the people that you meet when you go to the studio, the people that talk to you, the influencer managers, everyone is great. But the people that screw you are always the people at the top, the people that are making like the overarching decisions. And it sucks that like the people that the good people that you actually have experiences with, you know that they're like good at their job. For example, Riot Ice Chest. Like, this is somebody who you
that guy also is great.
Yes. He's somebody who got fired. And it's like, this guy is just great to be around. And like what he does was an important part. And essentially what Riot did is they're like, do you show direct profitability? It's like, well, like, I guess not, because like, how do you fucking quantify like his value within what he does in the company? Like what he was doing for pro players, what he did to just make the LCS a better product in general. How do you like one-to-one, like there's not a dollar number next to like the fact that he was great to work with. So all the pro players liked working with him. So they tried their best to like do things that made the product better. Like none of that is actually quantifiable easily. So because of that, he's just getting fired. Like I just hate that type of mentality.
Yeah. Just a tough time. So again, if you see anyone reposting, hey, I got let go, you see that little red fist thingy that's been going around and the, I guess, repost that's around it, make sure to let that person know you thank them for their time and their efforts. For putting their favorite product on, because again, it hit a lot of people in esports here, overseas. Some of the first riders that were my mentors, some of the people that are trying to sell the product, some people that on the photography team, some of the producers that I know like produced some of the high quality stuff and not just like shit pieces. So yeah, just a tough time there, and you know, send your best thoughts to them as they work through that. All of us know what, all three of us know what it's like when Riot kind of gives you the boot and you're like, what do I do? What's going on? It's not a fun thing to have to go through.
Yes. Riot Reject Podcast. Let's go.
Yeah. All right. With that said, let's close this one down here. Dom, where are people going to be catching you this week? What's your schedule?
Same as always. I'm doing LPL every single day, LEC and LCS. Also playing solo queue on stream.
Crazy. Crazy man. Oh, wow. Monty, how about you?
Trying to sleep for more than 2 to 3 hours consecutively, but when I'm not failing to do that, I have been doing a bunch of my bangers only streams in the morning, like Korea time, which is evening US time. So that's been fun, and I'll just continue. I mean, I have to watch these games anyway, so it helps me remember them and do analysis on them. So I've been streaming that. It's been good. Otherwise, doing Summoning Insight, doing Monty and Wolf's show. So I'm doing 3 League of Legends podcasts. Still doing the culture content. So Nerd Legion with Doa and 4Play with Richard and Thorin. And we're probably going to do a lot more 4 Horsemen this year as well, because shit's going real wrong, as you guys can see, based on our previous conversation. And now the Saudis are just here in League of Legends, too. So cool. They cannot be stopped from anywhere, apparently. And Riot is just fine making deals with them. And nobody cares, I guess. Nobody cares anymore. Neom, we're all up in arms. Literally partnering with the Saudi government? No, it's fine. Everybody's cool with it now. So clearly more 4 Horsemen are needed.
They are needed for the education, because I think a lot of people didn't understand that reference that you actually just said. So please keep it tuned here to all of our content that we've got going on at Last Free Nation. For myself, I think a big announcement happening next week. So I'll put that out on my next podcast. So it's the announcement of the announcement. And like Dom,
classic
we also
esports.
Yeah, classic esports.
And I thought they like fired Dom, all the PR people from they fired all the PR people from Riot Esports, right? I saw a bunch of them get let go. So now you have to do the announcement of the announcement yourself, right?
That's right. Yeah.
In the League of Legends space.
In the Photoshop. I'm using ChatGPT to make sure sensitive, but stern, you know, that's kind of like the message that they put out. Like Dom, we in low Elo creators had like a race to diamond, and you know, I told people I'm using my Smurf because I wanted to try to start from bronze to see if I could get to diamond, even though I've never gotten to diamond before. Yeah.
No, no. For the Deagon Says.
No, the Deagon Says account is the good one. 80% win rate. I'm crushing it. I hit plat today.
The question is, what did Deagon say that got him in such severe trouble? Deagon says some very naughty words.
Deagon says a slur.
His next account is just Deagon Slurs.
No. All right. With that, you can come watch my stream as we continue to progress up to diamond. I promise I'm reformed. I'm going to buy a tank top 2 that says it. Like, things are going to be great. My stream's going to pop off, but not as much as our content here at Last Free Nation will. Make sure to like and subscribe, and we'll catch you guys next week for the next episode of Power Spike. See you later.